and welcome to Under the Olive Tree. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Today is January 26, 2006, and the hour is 11. We will be with you till noon as usual. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestinian Canadian Community Radio Show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first is to provide the space, the equipment, and the know-how to Palestinian youth in order for them to reach our second goal, to produce content that truly represents the Palestinian community. If you'd like to join us or have any questions, please email us at uot@ckut.ca. Again, that's uot@ckut.ca, or give us a call at area code 514-398-6788. Again, the number is area code 514-398-6788. Yesterday, the Palestinian people voted in parliamentary elections. Official results indicate that Hamas has won between 70 to 80 seats out of the 135-seat parliament. Marwan Barghouti, the Palestinian politician in prison in Israel, was heading the Fatah list for the elections. Our Montreal Collective member, Christine Bro, interviewed Jawad Bolus, Mr. Barghouti's lawyer, who happens to be also one of the most famous Palestinian lawyers in Israel. He defended many political prisoners, and he speaks to us on the issue of the election and Marwan Barghouti in jail. Our second interview of the day is with Ali Abu Na'meh, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, who happens to be on a tour in southern Ontario and Quebec. The interview was conducted by Sabine Freisinger, our Montreal Collective member. Ali has two events happening in Montreal. Both of them happen on Friday, January 27th. That's tomorrow. The first is co-hosted by CKUT Radio and the First People's House in McGill. It happens at 3 p.m. in the First People's House at 3505 Peel Street in McGill University. And the second event happens in UQAM later on the same day. It is a full lecture in French, and the details will follow. Before we go to our first interview with Jawad Bolus on Marwan Barghouti being a political prisoner, we will listen to a song by Abu Arab, the voice of Palestinian refugees. The song is titled "Oh My Brother in Jail," and definitely is dedicated to political prisoners, to the Palestinian prisoners that are spending time in prison because of their belief in freedom, their belief in equality, and their belief in their right to live free. We listen to the song by Abu Arab.
اشهدي ارض الوطن يا ديرة علي والله ما ذل لو يكوي الجسد بالنار ترتعب من العدا والقيد بيدي يا خويا البزنزان سمعت صوتك حيان يا خويا البزنزان سمعت صوتك حيان اياك تزت البارود هيك الواجب دعاني صوتك صوتك من صوت سلاحي جرحك من ضمن جراحي صوتك من صوت سلاحي جرحك من ضمن جراحي مستمر بكفاحي علشانك علشاني ما تنام عيوني وانتو جوا السجون والله ما تنام عيوني وانتو جوا السجون حتى آخر صهيوني يرحل عن أرض وطاني سجنك سيجني وصمودك بيعزيزني يا خوي سجنك سيجني وصمودك بيعزيزني بكرا يا خوي منيجني ثورة ناصر إخواني مرمي البارود هي عنوان صبود والله مرمي البارود هي عنوان صبود تضمن لا أهل العود عادي يرتو دياني آلامك من آلامي وأحلامك من أحلامي آلامك من آلامي وأحلامك من أحلامي لا ودي لك سلامي برصاصنا الرناني يا بالزنداني ميعط صوتك ناداني اياك تلت البارود هيك الواجب داعاني خوي بسجنك صابر وانا عالدرب بمثابر يا خوي بسجنك صابر وانا عالدرب بمثابر ازعر يا سبع الكاسر ما يهمك السجاني عيونك يا خاي اخوانك فدائي عند عيونك يا خاي اخوانك فدائي غز وضف الغربي مثل اللهب شعلاني يا قلب الزنزاني ميعط صوتك ناداني يا خويا قلب الزنزاني ميعط صوتك ناداني اياك تزت البارود هيك الواجب داعاني.
Today we have the honor of speaking with Mr. Jawad Bulos, one of the most renowned international human rights lawyers in Israel, who is also the lawyer of political prisoner Marwan Barghouti. Mr. Bulos is a Palestinian living in Israel who has spent most of his life fighting for the rights of Palestinian political prisoners, and it is a pleasure to have him on the show. For those who do not know, Marwan Barghouti, who was a member of Fatah, was illegally arrested by Israel on April 15, 2002, as a way of removing him from Palestinian politics. Marwan Barghouti is often described by some as the Palestinian Nelson Mandela. He is currently serving 5 life sentences in an Israeli jail for murder and attempted murder. Barghouti's supporters correctly allege that these charges were politically motivated and therefore consider him a political prisoner, illegally held in an Israeli prison. Moreover, Israel's illegal arrest, detainment, and torture of Marwan Barghouti have been a breach to many fundamental international laws and human rights codes. Accordingly, I now turn to Mr. Boulos for further clarification on the case. First off, could you briefly describe the case of Marwan Barghouti for our listeners and explain to what extent Barghouti's supporters are correct in such a statement? In what way is his arrest politically motivated, and how is his imprisonment a violation to international law?
Yes, thank you for giving this opportunity to me to clarify one of the still existing and maybe the hottest case in Israel-Palestine, the political prisoners in general, and Marwan Barghouti is in particular. We have to remember first the period when Israel decided to arrest, or even more than arresting him, I think that Israel tried first to get rid of Marwan Barghouti. The moment they failed, they arrested him finally. And this was before almost 4 years, in the peak of the current intifada, where Palestinians went to streets and even more to struggle against the occupation and to struggle against what Israel is doing daily in the Palestinian cities and villages. Israel, in fact, invaded a city called Ramallah. Ramallah is a city which were entitled, as other cities, Palestinian cities, as a Palestinian city under a full Palestinian control, including security and, of course, civil and other affairs. And this position were given to those cities according to the agreement signed in between Israel, the State of Israel, and the PLO, where Palestinians took some areas defined as areas A to a full control under the Palestinian Authority established after the Oslo Agreement. Israel, the Israeli troops invaded this city and arrested Marwan Barghouti and transferred Marwan Barghouti to inside Israel. This act is in contradiction with the Geneva Convention, Fourth Geneva Convention, I think Article 49, where an occupying power is not allowed to convey or to transfer any of the occupied individuals or groups to the state occupying any land. So by international law, Israel is having Marwan Barghouti inside Israel illegally. Secondly, we have said that Israel, of course, broke the agreements which were signed with the PLO by invading a city, arresting a man. And just to remind the people listening to you, Israel took some commitments, and they have arranged how Israel can arrest or demand the arrest of a Palestinian living in areas A, where Marwan used to live. And these arrangements were broken severely by this military invasion to Ramallah. But above all, Israel wanted to show to the world that Marwan Barghouti, as a sample, as a symbol to the Intifada, he is not a fighter for his people's freedom, but he is a terrorist. And then they charged him as a terrorist. They charged him as he is heading a terrorist organization, and that he is connected with the head of this terrorist organization, namely the Fatah, the largest national movement among Palestinians. And at the time, the head of this organization was the late leader Yasser Arafat, and his name is mentioned in the charges against Marwan Barghouti. Israel wanted to say to the whole world that this intifada and all actions taken by the Palestinians are not more than terrorist actions against Israel, as against the state of Israel, etc., etc., etc. The moment Israel decided to submit a charge sheet against Marwan, me and Marwan have announced immediately that we are not going to consider the power of Israel, neither to arrest him nor to interrogate him, and of course not to judge him in any of the Israeli courts, because the theory behind the charges, as I've said, was is to prove to the whole world that Marwan is a terrorist, his organization is a terrorist movement, etc., etc., etc. Israel wanted to say that Marwan has a full right as an individual, as a citizen inside this state, namely Israel, to defend himself, claiming that they will give him a full opportunity to gain or to have a fair trial, and therefore they decided to have him in front of a civil trial in Tel Aviv. Marwan wanted to say to the whole world by not accepting the competency, the authority of the Israeli authorities, that Israel is a state. It's true, but it is an occupying state. I am Marwan Barghouti, is a citizen or an individual. That's true, but I belong to a nation under occupation, and me and my nation has a full right to struggle against the occupation. And I'm not a terrorist. I am a fighter for my freedom and my people's freedom. And if somebody in this quotation, in this formula, is a terrorist, those are the Israelis who are occupying us, who are humiliating us, who are depriving us from the very basic rights and the occupation. Through a long history, we're always accepted as the summit, as the biggest move of terrorism. I think by exposing this position to the whole world, it was accepted by a very large and wide institutional position in the whole world, and even inside Israel. None of the Israelis accepted clearly the position which the Israeli political forces tried to impose by having this case. And I think that we succeeded in a way to present the case of Marwan as a sample of all the political prisoners living inside Israel or detained inside the Israeli prisons.
So you already went over the fact that Israel had no jurisdiction to prosecute Marwan Barghouti. I just wanted to ask you that, what is the difference and significance of Israel choosing to try Barghouti in the Israeli civilian courtroom instead of a military tribunal, as Israel usually does with other arrested Palestinian militants?
I think that it's a decorative distinction Israel wanted to use in order to prove to the whole world that they are trying to give Marwan Barghouti the utmost opportunity to have a fair trial, as I said. And Shimon Peres, who at the time declared this position on behalf of Israel, he said that we want to give him the fair opportunity to have a fair trial, confessing implicitly, as a matter of fact, that he is that the military courts acting in the occupied territories are not enough fair. But it has no essential difference. The laws used are the same laws, and the outcome of this court just could and can and will prove that it was just a decorative play or game from the Israeli side. And I think that they also failed in this move they wanted to use.
Now I would like to go on and talk about the idea of diplomatic immunity. For example, if Israel will go as far as to lift diplomatic immunity from a prominent Israeli Arab politician like Azmi Bishara because he represented a so-called threat to the Israeli state, what significance does diplomatic immunity hold in Barghouti's case? And is there any hope that Israel will recognize diplomatic immunity to politicians in the occupied territories?
The situation relating to any member of the Israeli Knesset, member of the Israeli parliament, is totally different of what is existing in the West Bank and in the Palestinian territories. Members of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, are entitled to diplomatic or to political immunity according to the Israeli laws applicable inside Israel and inside the borders of Israel. While in the occupied territories, Israel did not accept the issue of any kind of immunity to any of the Palestinian leaders. And it was clarified clearly in the Oslo Agreement and in all the agreements came after as additional agreements or appendixes. So neither Marwan nor any of the Palestinian leaders are entitled, not in the past, of course, not now, to such kind of immunity. If this will happen in the future or not, it depends on what political developments and on the future circumstances, if these agreements will be upgraded to something else. But according to the situation existed, no immunity is given to any of the Palestinians living in the occupied territories.
At the moment right now, with the split in Fatah, with the old guards and the new guards, and the new party formed under Barghouti al-Mustaqbal, meaning the future, and Hamas's popularity and growing support in the region, I'd like to ask you, is there any hope at the moment for Barghouti's release? What kind of discourse is there in the Israeli political circles? Is there a possibility that they will release Barghouti to check this growing power and popularity of Hamas?
Yes, first of all, this split inside the Fatah in the current circumstances is in a way sorrowful to every Palestinian or to every liberal, secular, or national Palestinian. But I think that it is just normal and it's accepted through history. So many liberation movements went to such a process. We have to remember that the Fatah is leading the Palestinian national movement for more than four decades, and some new circumstances had been happened or happening in our area, so it's just natural. Meanwhile, the two lists came once again to be one list, and Fatah is running in these elections in one list headed by Marwan Barghouti. Although the actions took place before the unifications or the reunification of the two lists, of course, had brought some kind of weakness to Fatah movement. About Hamas, this is the first time Hamas is running in the Palestinian elections. And of course, it's a kind of a big and severe change. I don't know what will be the results of tomorrow, because the elections will be in 25th of January, it's tomorrow. I think still Fatah and other parties having the majority, this is my assessment to the situation. In my personal assessment, the question of releasing Barghouti is not on anybody's agenda now, of course not inside Israel. I always said, and I'm still saying, that Barghouti is not the problem. Barghouti is and will be the solution, or a part of solution. Marwan will be released as a part of a whole political deal or development. So far, I don't see the elements or the factors which will bring to an immediate release of Marwan Barghouti. It is not in any contradiction with the fact that Marwan Barghouti now is one of the most prominent, if not the first, main leader. And the fact that every leader of the Palestinians found himself recently visiting him in prison, consulting him, advising him, and getting his approval to this issue or getting his idea to that issue is just an extra proof to those who did not accept our position from the very beginning of his arrestment that he is the man. He represents a whole stream among Palestinians, the new generation, a generation who had lived the 40 years of the Israeli occupation day by day. They have suffered from this occupation. They have lived in the Israeli prisons. They have studied the Israeli psychological structure and etc., etc. They know the language of the occupier power. They know the games of the occupier power. And I think that this generation naturally will lead in the future the struggle against the occupation or the solution for a lasting and a just peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So whether he will be released immediately or not, nobody can have a tiny doubt that Marwan and his group will play, and they are playing a major role, a cardinal role in what is happening on the political arena, Palestinianly speaking, and of course about what is happening in between the two peoples here.
That was Jawad Boulos being interviewed by Christine Bro on the situation of Marwan Barghouti in jail and other political prisoners. The interview was done in good timing since Marwan has just been elected to the Palestinian parliament, leading the Fatah party in the parliament. Next, we have another song, actually a spoken word piece by, again, Abu Arab, the voice of Palestinian refugees in diaspora. And the song is dedicated to the struggle for freedom in Palestine.
حاضر كل ما ينادي المنادي أنا جندي يا أهلي جندوني فدا تحريرها تربت بلادي أهلي بالمدارس علموني حتى كبرت أنا ونلت الشهادي ولما لا بلاد بيطلبوني لحتى بكل ما أملك أفادي فلسطين الليالي علموني لغير القدس ما بعشق مبادي ومهما حاولوا تيحرفوني بظلوا بس لبلادي ودادي فلسطيني ومهما يحاربوني ما تعودت تبويس الأيادي فلسطيني ومهما يحاصروني مثل الصقر يصعب اصطيادي ومهما حاولوا تيهددوني خلقت من المنايا والعوادي ومهما حاولوا تيخرسوني صوتي ضل داوب كل وادي وعلى التطبيع مهما روضوني على التطبيع يصعب انقيادي انا الصاروخ يلا اطلقوني تحطم غطرسة جيش الأعادي ومهما عالتفاوض ساوموني ما برضى غير بيرجع كريمي يا بالتحرير يما بالشهادي.
That was Abu Arab singing for the struggle of freedom in Palestine. We turn to our collective member, Sabine Friesinger, interviewing Ali Abu Naame, founder of Electronic Intifada. Ali speaks to us from Waterloo, Ontario, as part of his 2006 speaking tour in southern Ontario and Quebec. Sabine interviewed Ali on the current Palestinian election, the Gaza disengagement, and the role of the media.
Today, I'm speaking with Ali Abu Naame, co-founder of the website Electronic Intifada. He is an author, journalist, and media commentator specializing in American relations with the Arab world. He is currently on a speaking tour across southern Ontario and Quebec. Ali Abu Naame, welcome to Under the Olive Tree.
Thank you very much.
So how has the tour been going so far?
It's been wonderful. There was a great turnout in Waterloo on election night, and so I'm glad people found my talk more interesting than watching the elections.
I'm sure it is. So currently elections are being held, this week in Palestine. There have been numerous reports of the Israeli government preventing Palestinians, notably in East Jerusalem, from participating in the elections. Palestinian refugees and the diaspora are obviously or absent from the election. What do you think of this election process?
Well, you pointed out some of the difficulties with it, the fact that two-thirds of Palestinians are totally excluded from the process because those who live in the West Bank and Gaza is only a third of the Palestinian people. And even within the West Bank and Gaza, we see the absurdity of conducting elections under a very brutal military occupation. Yesterday, a 13-year-old Palestinian boy was shot for no apparent reason by the Israeli army and killed. This is something that is a routine occurrence. And Palestinians are under siege, living behind fences and walls, and the idea of a normal democracy in those circumstances is absolutely unthinkable. And in addition to that, we've seen revelations in the past 2 days that the United States government has channeled more than $2 million to the Fatah faction of Palestinian Authority Chairman Mahmoud Abbas to try to prop them up in the election. And so this shows that this is an engineered election. It's not a genuine attempt to allow the Palestinians under occupation to express their desire.
Mm-hmm. Recently, the U.S. and the European Union have made promises to Israel that they would not recognize any Palestinian government, as you mentioned, in which Hamas would participate in. Yet support for Hamas is rising in several areas of the occupied territories. Now, where does this leave the Palestinians and the Palestinian democracy or the possibilities of something like that happening?
Well, I don't even like to use the term government when you say Palestinian government, because government implies an entity that has authority over a territory and has the ability to act in the interests of its citizens. And that cannot be used to describe the Palestinian Authority. Since it was created, it has had no power and no will to protect and defend the Palestinian people against the constant assault of Israel, the continued colonization. Never in its history did the Palestinian Authority prevent Israel from establishing one settlement or uprooting a single tree in the occupied territories. This continues every day. So when we speak of government, you know, the first duty of any government is to defend its settlements, its citizens, and the Palestinian Authority has no capacity to do that because it wasn't designed for that. It was designed to be a sort of a subcontractor for the occupation, to take the burden of the occupation away from Israel while Israel gets to continue colonizing the territory. So I don't think it makes a big difference one way or the other what happens in the election. Hamas is powerful regardless of whether the elections are there, because I think the support for Hamas is an expression of the rejection of Palestinians of all of the lengthy peace process which resulted in nothing except more Israeli colonies on their land. And I think that if anything, Hamas's participation in the election will pull the curtain down from in front of this charade, and people will see that we're not really involved in the genuine peace process, but simply trying to create a fake normality on top of an abnormal situation of foreign military occupation. To say, look, the Palestinians are having elections, you know, things are moving in the right direction, when the reality is on the ground is that Israel is continuing to expand settlements, to confiscate land, to uproot trees, to create new Palestinian refugees every day while the international community sits on its hands and does nothing.
Mm-hmm. Just a few months after the so-called disengagement of the Gaza Strip, you kind of point out in several occasions, you pointed out that the fact that Israel actually managed to pull a sort of demographic trick by pulling out of Gaza. Can you explain this to our listeners?
Yes, of course. What I'm referring to there is that, you know, all of the preoccupation of Israeli leaders now is that in all of the territory controlled by Israel, so that includes Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, which, despite the disengagement, is still under Israeli military control, the population today is about 12 million souls, and roughly 5.5 million are Palestinians, and just under 5.5 million are Israeli Jews, and there's a few hundred thousand other people. What this means, in effect, is that Israeli Jews, who are the ruling group, they hold a total monopoly on political, military, and economic power, are the minority. So this creates a situation which looks very similar to apartheid South Africa, where you have a privileged minority ruling over a disenfranchised majority. So by pulling the settlers out of Gaza, Israel claimed that it's no longer controlling Gaza, and therefore the 1.4 million Palestinians living in Gaza somehow ceased to count, that we should ignore their existence, and that this magically removes them from the demographic equation, and Israel can say that it once more has a Jewish majority. But you can only believe that if you think that 1.4 million Palestinians simply disappeared off the face of the earth. They didn't. And this so-called demographic threat to Israel still exists. And Israel's entire policy now is to try to isolate the Palestinians literally in concrete cages in order to say, you know, we're no longer responsible for them. In order to prevent the day when Palestinians say, look, we are the majority in the country, we deserve equal political rights, we deserve to have a say in ruling a country in which we are the majority. And Israel is trying to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the international community praised Israel, however, for the Gaza pullout, painting all sorts of optimistic scenarios. As you point out, however, the situation on the ground, according to numerous reports, is very different. What needs to change in terms of at the international level in order to bring the reality to light?
Well, the reason that powerful countries, the U.S., the European Union, Canada, other countries have been praising Israel is because politically that's much cheaper and easier than dealing with the reality. If they wanted to really move us towards peace and to contribute towards a just and fair peace for Israelis and Palestinians, they would have to stand up to Israel. They would have to confront Israel as the world confronted apartheid South Africa, as the world occasionally confronts other aggressor states. But for various political reasons related to domestic politics and other issues, that's very costly for politicians to do. So it's easier for them to talk about peace plans, to focus attention on the Palestinians, and to say the key to peace is internal Palestinian reform, because politically that costs nothing to say that. It's much, much harder, as we see, politicians who take courageous stands and say that the Israeli occupation has to end, that Israeli war crimes have to be, that Israelis have to be held accountable for the war crimes that have been documented and are ongoing. Those politicians don't do very well in Western societies, and so they choose the easier option. What has to change is that we, who care, who want to see peace for Israelis and Palestinians, who want to see an end to this conflict, demand of our governments and our politicians that they live up to their international obligations, which is to enforce UN resolutions demanding that Israel end the occupation, end the settlements, allow refugees to return to their homes, and that they apply the same standards to Israel as they would apply to other countries.
Mm-hmm. Now, the media certainly has a role in bringing the message out to people. Also in this whole process of change, what is your assessment of the media's work, especially the media in North America? If you can talk a little bit about how are Palestinians presented in the media?
Well, just to give a very brief example, there are many ways to look at this, but just to give very brief examples, you know, when they had the so-called Gaza disengagement and those settlers were being pulled from Gaza by unarmed Israeli soldiers, something like 3,000 or 4,000 journalists went to Gaza to cover that. And so you had approximately one journalist for every two Israeli settlers, which is just extraordinary. And yet, at the same time as Israel is continuing this full-scale assault on Palestinian land, confiscating land continuously. I'm talking about today, this is going on, to build more Jewish-only settlements into occupied territories. Nobody is covering it. It's as if it's not happening. But it is the reality Palestinians are living. But it's rendered invisible by the irresponsibility of the major media, particularly in North America.
Now, as co-founder of Electronic Intifada, or founder, which really has become a pillar in terms of getting information, real information on the ground, different than the mainstream media, how difficult has it been for you to run such an initiative in the context of the United States, Chicago, where you're based from?
Well, the difficulties are that, you know, there's very little, that it relies very much on the commitment and passion of all the people who are involved in it, as all such efforts do, that, it's always a struggle to do the work. We have to do it in our spare time. We all have to make a living. And so that's the biggest challenge, I think, is that there isn't much support for this kind of initiative. And in a way, of course, that limits what we can do. But in a way, to me, the most important element of our work is that we're independent. We're not dependent on any funding which is tied to any political agenda. And unfortunately, there has been a flood of money into Palestine from international donors, which forces local institutions and NGOs that receive the funds to stick to a certain political agenda. And to me, the most important thing is maintaining that independent voice. And the great thing is that we receive a response for the work we do. And, what keeps us going is the fact that so many people write to us, teachers, students, many people who say, you know, we never knew this before. Thank you for doing it. And that, I think, makes it worth it to me, despite the difficulties, despite sometimes the very unfair and vicious, slanderous attacks made against us in other media in the U.S. But we continue no matter what.
Well, Ali, I wish you good luck on your tour in Southern Ontario and Quebec. Unfortunately, this is all the time we have. Thank you so much for participating, and we look forward to seeing you in Montreal here on the 27th of January.
I can't wait to be in Montreal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. So I was speaking to Ali Abunima, writer and co-founder of Electronic Intifada. Ali is currently on a speaking tour across Southern Ontario and Quebec. He will be in Montreal on December 27th at UQAM University at 7 p.m. To find out more about the exact location, visit www.sbhr.org. And Ali will be speaking in French, but you will have chances to ask questions in English as also. Electronic Intifada, to find out more, can be viewed at www.electronicintifada.net. Thank you.
أبو عمار.
والأقصى بصوته بيصيح يا السارة يا أبو عمار
Well, بغداد بغداد شو اللي جرى وشو صاير تخسر عات البقر بغداد تخزيكي بغداد عز العروب وكل مخلص صاير يتأمل الخير يا بغداد ما فيك هذا البيت رد على البعض اللي بيقولوا انه الغرباء اللي بيقاتلوا بالعراق فالعربي وطن العراق والجزائر وطنه غصب عن كل معتدي اوف ماني غريب الاهل ماني غريب الدار الدار دار واهالينا اهالي الموصل كغزة والبصرة جبال النار جنين بغداد بالأرواح وبحلفك يا كربلاء بحيدر الكرار وقبر الحسين الأبل طهر أراضيك لا ترتضين الخون مع زمرة الأشرار لا تقبلين الدمى يتحكموا فيك اوف اجعلي اجعلي حجارك جمر واجعلي رملك نار واجعل تراب القبر لكل امري We'll be right back.
That was Abu Arab again, ending our show with two beautiful songs recorded at last year's concert held by Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights with Abu Arab. You must have noticed that the first two tracks, his voice is totally different than these last two tracks. There is probably a difference of at least 30 years of age in the two recordings. Abu Arab was in his 80s. As he performed in the concert in Montreal. This brings us to the end of our show today. I would like to remind you all to go and listen to Ali Abu Ni'me in either of his two lectures. Both of them are on Friday. The first lecture at 3 p.m. Friday, January 27th in the First People's House. The address is 3505 Peel Street in McGill University and is held with CKUT. The second, and that is the main lecture, which will be in French, is held in UQAM. It will be at 7 p.m., January 27th, again. And the address is 315 St. Catherine Street East in room RM110. For information, visit www.sphr.org. This brings us to the end of our show. Until we meet next week under the olive tree, I wish you all a free, free Palestine.